Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
Welcome to the world of esophageal atresia, esophageal atresia and its treatment. We're speaking today with Professor Dr. Friedrich Gottrank of Lille, who is an eminence in the field of esophageal atresia, its diagnosis, its treatment, and its management. And his eminence has been recognized, I think I want to mention at the moment, by a receipt at the World Congress on Esophageal Atresia in June of 2019, by a receipt of the Premier Prix Mondial de l'Atresie de l'Esophage, or the first world prize for first world prize in esophageal atresia. I think in is the preposition that I want to use there, dealing with in, yeah. And the question then comes up, what is esophageal atresia? You may think you know, but you don't, because esophageal malformations and their surgical repair present the person dealing with this, with these attempts at palliation, with a bewildering mix of dysmotility, dysphagia, malnutrition, reflux, inflammation, malignancy, and pulmonary and otolaryngologic disease, all as sequelae. How are these patients, whether with a remodeled native esophagus or a substituted organ, in, for example, the case of colonic interposition or replacement, to be assessed, to be followed? This is monstrously complicated. And improvement in survival means that year by year, more and more patients with these problems must be attended, and their problems must be addressed. Dr. Gottrand asks us to take on board that esophageal atresia is no longer a disorder of infants only. He presents us with the spectrum of evolution of esophageal atresia in later childhood, adolescence, and adulthood, with its many and varied complications, and offers us recommendations for organization of lifelong follow-up with transition from pediatric to adult care. He does this in a framework of two articles of relevance, which are cited for you in the note that accompanies this podcast, and I strongly urge you, my listeners, to consult those articles and to learn. With that, I introduce Professor Dr. Gottrank.
Thank you very much for the introduction and a very good summary of the story of the Figueira atresia. It was supposed at the beginning of the 1950s to be a pure surgical disease. And the surgeon and the neonatologist were very happy when they were able to do the operation at the day of life and put again in contact the two pouch of the esophagus. Mm-hmm. And now the survival, thanks to this advance in intensive care unit and surgery, is good in rich country, in developed country. And survival is more than 95%.
So high is that? I mean, all right.
Mm-hmm. Sorry?
I'm saying, so high is that? And I would bet that those patients who don't survive also have malformations in other organ systems that impair their ability to survive. That it's not just a matter of the esophagus, but instead of complex, say, cardiovascular malformations or other problems. Am I right?
You're perfectly right. The two major causes of death in the early life, mm-hmm. most of the deaths occur during the first year of life, mm-hmm. is due to prematurity, extreme prematurity, and associated malformation, which is very frequent. More than 50-60% of esophageal atresia have other malformations, cardiac, digestive, bone, kidney, brain, and so on. And of course, cardiopathy is the second cause of death, on top of course, difficult case, infectious leakage, difficult surgery.
Oh, boy. Well, here you have not just one disorder. There are, I remember from my days looking through surgical textbooks as a medical student, how many different kinds of esophageal atresia there were and how complexly the esophagus, the aerodigestive tract in the broadest sense, could be misshapen and misconnected. Esophagi that end in the, that end in a bronchus, so on and so forth. Remarkable, and remarkable that they can be sorted out at all. For example, what do you do when the two ends of the esophagus are simply not capable of apposition, of being brought into contact with one another? How is that handled?
So this corresponds to the so-called long gap, where the difference between the two pouches are too long for repairing in the first time by the surgeon.
By primary intention,
by
yes.
By primary intention. So there are two options. One is to try to elongate or to wait that the two pouches are enough closed to be sutured and repaired, or to replace the esophagus either by colon, which is a classical way, either by stomach with ascending stomach, or even by jejunum now, which is a very promising new technique.
Bringing a segment of jejunum up as the for interposition and connection with two. Well, that's something that my surgical textbooks didn't include, but then again, that was 40 years ago, so what's to be expected? How are you organizing in Lille the follow-up of these complex patients? You must have clinics upon clinics upon clinics and a very broad-based team.
Absolutely. Esophageal atresia is now a multidisciplinary disease for all lifelong. And so thanks to the French rare disease program, which was set and funded by the government 15 years ago, and now European initiative such as the ERN, European Rare Network, there has been a big effort to try to put multidisciplinary teams in the big centers taking care of these children, associated surgeon, neonatologist, ped GI as I am, pediatric ENT doctors, pediatric pulmonologist, but also psychologists, speech therapists, dietitian. And so we draw in France a patient journey where at different time of their life, and we produce with the NASGAN and ESGAN a consensus almost 10 years ago, where we advise on at what time and what to do with a child being operated with an esophageal atresia. That means follow-up at 1 year of age with an endoscopy, with a pH impedance to look for the gastroesophageal reflux, which is very, very frequent due to the dysmotility induced by the malformation.
Yes.
It's also at the age of six, looking at the pulmonary function because they have a tracheal malacia, there are pulmonary problems associated, as you just mentioned, is a complex disease, not only GI, but also respiratory system. It's also to follow feeding, introduction of food, because the anastomosis can be obstructed with a stenosis due to the surgical procedure. So you have to delay the anastomosis. There are more frequent gastroesophageal reflux, esophagitis, fungal infection of the esophagus. So these children needs a long-term follow-up, a multidisciplinary one, because the surgeon cannot not do that, the PGI alone neither. So it's starting a team and following this patient at different time of their life, and especially at the time of adolescence, because of the transition is very important. We don't want them to be lost of follow-up. We want them to be re-informed about their disease, because when they were born, their parents were informed about the disease, but a child coming, an adolescent, sometimes don't know why and for what he has been operated, and to try to do the follow-up until they reach adulthood, since there are still complications in adolescence and adulthood. When you look at the study we have setting up in France, but within Europe and within the international network on autophagia atresia we built 10 years ago, we understood that an adult living with autophagia atresia still have dysphagia, still have coughing, still have reflux symptoms, and need to be followed up during all his life.
How many such... One of the reasons that I elected to move from the United States to London 25 years ago now, 25 years ago, was because of centralization through the National Health Service of difficult and rare disorders. There were only 3 pediatric liver units in the United Kingdom, south, leaving out Scotland, and I chose to accept a job offer in the largest, the one in London at King's College Hospital. It was a chance to learn so much and a chance possibly to make a contribution, I thought to myself. How does France handle the referral and the care of such complicated and potentially difficult patients within her borders? It would be folly, I think, to have more than 3, maybe even more than 2. I mean, you have the TGV, you can be in Lille in a half an hour. Do you even need a unit in Paris? I say no.
It's a good question, but it's not completely respondent now. And I will try to explain you why. Most of the cases of esophageal atresia are the type C, where the fistula is quite easily repaired by the surgeon, and their life are not so bad. And moving all the patient in 2 or 3 centers in a country, since I just explained you that they need a follow-up for, they make frequent foot blockage, frequent respiratory problem, going to the emergency department or needing an endoscopy or to see a psychologist or a gastro or whatever, a dietitian. It would be a pity to put all these patients in a car, even in a TGV, only for a consultation. So what we decided and what we set up since this time is, of course, to restrict the place where these children are taking in care, in a place where you have a pediatric surgeon, type 3 neonatal unit, meaning that you have a high level, and then let the child be taken in care by the local hospital, but providing recommendation, providing we have a 1 month meeting where everybody can contact and discuss difficult case, developing sophisticated techniques, endoscopy one or surgical one, only in some specialized, to refer only the more complicated case to the big hospital where you are all the staff, all the expertise to do that. But to avoid on the psychological, on the social, on the familial things, to transfer every time from sometime 2, 3, 1,000 kilometers from a centers only for a consultation. So our spirit is to increase the level of every center rather than putting all the cases in two or three centers. But it's complete, really a hot topic in the field of esophageal atresia. In some country, Sweden, for example, or in Netherlands, they decided to have only, in Sweden, it's only two centers. In Netherlands, it's three centers. In France, children are taken care in any university hospital where you have pediatric surgeon and a neonatology unit and at a good level, and it's 33 centers. But 33 centers. But we organize the things to refer the more complicated, the long gap or recurrent fistula or recurrent stenosis, to the more to the biggest centers. And to support what I'm defending and I'm believing it's a good way to think, we have set up in France in 2008 a population-based registry where we put all the cases in France born with esophageal atresia. And then we follow up, and we have no more than 2,700 cases. It's the largest database, largest registry even started, and it's a population-based registry. And we are able to compare small centers to big centers. And according to mortality and morbidity, we cannot see any difference.
I find that an amazing accomplishment and something on which you and France should be congratulated. So now, it's time to talk about transition, and it's time to talk about centers of transition. How is that being organized?
So the transition is, as I mentioned, a real key issue, and the most difficult things we have with esophageal atresia, which is supposed to be a pediatric neonatal disease, is to find adult doctors interested in being involved. That's the biggest issue we have.
They're frightened, aren't they?
They are frightened. They don't know the disease. At the first consultation, the young adolescent or the young adult come with his father and mother, with 100 pages of medical reports.
Yes, yes.
And so the adult doctors at the beginning is afraid of taking this disease because the parents are experts in the disease. They know the best what happened when there are blockage, when they cough, when something wrong is there. But when you succeed in involving an adult doctor, whatever, it can be an adult surgeon, it can be a gastro, it can be an adult pulmonologist, a GP, whatever you involve in, when you have the classical process of transition, as you know, starting in early adolescence with a booklet information, asking the child to be re-informed, the family to be prepared to let this small baby becoming an adolescent to become an adult, deciding of his own life and choice. When you start this process, and in France we have a dedicated transition consultation at the time of adolescence, where the adult doctor come, where the surgeon, the pediatric surgeon is there, pediatric GI, the psychologist, and explaining, okay, this is now the time of the transfer, meaning that the next time the child will be followed in the adult world and world. And when you do that, a very low number of lost of follow-up, very low number of psychiatric or suicide, for example, is quite frequent after the transition if people are not well accompanied in that. So, and so that's a real key problem and a key issue, and we are making all our efforts to organize as best as possible the transition.
I think that anybody who's listened to this podcast has already got a real feel for how much work has been required and how much work has been done. You provided us, your team provided us, through the International Network on Esophageal Atresia, with consensus guidelines. Have those been, to your knowledge, widely adopted?
Again, a good question. We assess that, and we did a survey within Europe asking people if they know about the consensus, if they follow the statements. And of course, we are always a bit disappointed because we would like to have 100% of things followed.
There could always be more, yeah.
But in fact, it's not so bad. Half of the people we were interviewed and answered the survey know about the consensus and all the statements we did. And some of the statements we, for example, using PPI, systematic routine PPI for the first year of life, was followed by 60% of the people who were, we answered our survey, so it's not so bad.
But much better than nothing, and much better in terms of level of care, consistency of care, and proven aspects of care than was possible before. Sir, thank you very much for talking with us today. How do I say this best? For your efforts again in esophageal atresia, chapeau.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
We're not quite done. We're not quite done because you have to let us know which song that speaks to you, that speaks to Espigan, that that means something, maybe even to your patients, you'd like to add to the Spotify Espigan favorite songs list.
And the song I've chosen is from Sago de Sagazon, is in French, La Symphonie des Éclairs. It's speak about storm and flying, herpers, the storm. So it's very nice.
Great choice, and I certainly look forward to becoming familiar with the song. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.